3. He certainly was queer, but in all this there was a very great deal not clear to me. There was something underlying it all. I simply did not believe in this publication. Then that stupid letter in which there was an offer, only too barefaced, to give information and produce documents, though they were all silent about that, and talked of something quite different. Finally, that printing press, and Shartov's sudden exit, just because they spoke of a printing press. All this led me to imagine that something had happened before I came in of which I knew nothing, and consequently that it was no business of mine, and that I was in the way. And indeed it was time to take leave. I had stayed long enough for the first call. I went up to say good-bye to Lizaveta Nikolaevna. She seemed to have forgotten that I was in the room, and was still standing in the same place by the table with her head bowed, plunged in thought, gazing fixedly at one spot on the carpet. "Ah, you two are going. Goodbye," she murmured, in an ordinary friendly tone. "Give my greetings to Stepan Trofimovitch, and persuade him to come and see me as soon as he can." "Mavriky Nikolaevich, Anton Leverentyevich is going. Excuse Maman's not being able to come out and say good-bye to you." I went out, and had reached the bottom of the stairs, when a footman suddenly overtook me at the street door. "My lady begs you to come back." "The mistress, or Lizaveta Nikolaevna?" "The young lady." I found Liza not in the big room where we had been sitting, but in the reception room next to it. The door between it and the drawing room, where Mavriky Nikolaevich was left alone, was closed. Liza smiled to me, but was pale. She was standing in the middle of the room, in evident indecision, visibly struggling with herself. But she suddenly took me by the hand and led me quickly to the window. "I want to see her at once," she whispered, bending upon me a burning, passionate, impatient glance, which would not admit a hint of opposition. "I must see her with my own eyes, and I beg you to help me." She was in a perfect frenzy, and in despair. "Who is it you want to see, Lizaveta Nikolaevna?" I inquired in dismay. "That Lebyadkin's sister, that lame girl. Is it true that she's lame?" I was astounded. "I have never seen her, but I've heard that she's lame. I heard it yesterday," I said with hurried readiness, and also in a whisper. "I must see her, absolutely. Could you arrange it today?" I felt dreadfully sorry for her. "That's utterly impossible, and besides, I should not know at all how to set about it," I began persuading her. "I'll go to Shartov. If you don't arrange it by tomorrow, I'll go to her myself, alone, for Mavriky Nikolaevich has refused. I rest all my hopes on you, and I've no one else. I spoke stupidly to Shartov. I'm sure that you are perfectly honest, and perhaps ready to do anything for me. Only arrange it." I felt a passionate desire to help her in every way. "This is what I'll do," I said after a moment's thought. "I'll go myself today, and will see her for sure, for sure. I will manage so as to see her. I give you my word of honour. Only let me confide in Shartov. Tell him that I do desire it, and that I can't wait any longer, but that I wasn't deceiving him just now. He went away perhaps because he's very honest, and he didn't like my seeming to deceive him. I wasn't deceiving him. I really do want to edit books and found a printing press." "He is honest, very honest," I assented warmly. "If it's not arranged by tomorrow, though, I shall go myself whatever happens, and even if everyone were to know." "I can't be with you before 3 o'clock tomorrow," I observed, after a moment's deliberation. "At 3 o'clock, then." "Then it was true what I imagined yesterday at Stepan Trofimovitch's, that you are rather devoted to me," she said with a smile, hurriedly pressing my hand to say good-bye, and hurrying back to the forsaken Mavriky Nikolaevich. I went out, weighed down by my promise, and unable to understand what had happened. I had seen a woman in real despair, not hesitating to compromise herself by confiding in a man she hardly knew, her womanly smile at a moment so terrible for her, and her hint that she had noticed my feelings the day before sent a pang to my heart. But I felt sorry for her, very sorry, that was all. Her secrets became at once something sacred for me, and if anyone had begun to reveal them to me now, I think I should have covered my ears and should have refused to hear anything more. I only had a presentiment of something, yet I was utterly at a loss to see how I could do anything. What's more, I did not even yet understand exactly what I had to arrange. An interview? But what sort of an interview? And how could I bring them together? My only hope was Shatov, though I could be sure that he wouldn't help me in any way. But all the same, I hurried to him.